Thank you very much. Really appreciate that, Julia and Kylie. Great presentations. And certainly I know that the Recreational Reform Initiative is likely to generate a handful of questions because it is so closely tied to some of the things that we're considering for Part C of our task statement. So I want to thank you both again. I want to remind folks that Mike Luisi is also on the line, as is Caitlin Starks from the Commission, who's also been involved in the Recreational Reform Initiative. So at this time, I'd like to remind folks that they can ask questions by clicking on the participants icon in the bottom right-hand corner and then using the raise hand feature next to your name. So I'll go ahead and open it up for questions at this time. Michelle?
Thanks, Stacey, and thanks to Julia and Kylie for a great presentation. I had two questions, and you know, either of you handle them whichever way you prefer. But I think the first question is, you know, I think Julia, you mentioned that, you know, one of the items in the Rec Reform Initiative really kind of depends on how frequently we're getting stock assessments, and so I was wondering if either one of you guys could, you know, just describe to the committee how frequently stock assessments occur right now in the region. And, you know, I mean, there are, and maybe this is something Dr. Rago wants to tackle, but, you know, there's benchmark, there's operational, and I think there's data updates as well, but how frequently is the catch information that, you know, you all are working with updated? That's pretty much the first question from the assessment process. And then the second question, I had it and it flew right out of my head. So I'll stop right there, but reserve the right to ask my other question once I think about it. Thanks.
And I'll turn that over to Julia and Kylie. And Michelle, we'll come back to you as soon as their response ends. And you'll be next in line for your next question if you come up with it.
Yeah, I think any of us could answer that. So I guess I'll just start and then Kylie or Paul could elaborate. So there's recently been a change in like the process for stock assessments where moving forward, we do expect to get assessment updates every other year. And in the past, it was approximately that time frame for updates of existing assessments, but not as like, you know, clearly spelled out. So we do get updates, I think, fairly frequently, potentially compared to some other species or other regions. We're definitely not getting updates every year. I don't know that we've ever really had updates every year for these species, but every other year is what we're expecting moving forward and is approximately, you know, what we've had in the past, maybe every 2 to 3 years in the past, but moving forward, we do expect to get updates every other year. And I don't know if Kylie or Paul want to elaborate on that.
I'll just add that we can share the document that was developed by the Northeast Regional Coordinating Council to kind of lay out the plan for stock assessment timing and how that changed. And like Julia said, in the past, it was pretty variable and kind of just on an as-needed basis for each species. So it really varied a lot, but we're trying to move toward a consistent schedule for all of our species.
Thank you both. Michelle, yep, you've got your next question.
Yeah, and so I remembered what it was, and I apologize for perhaps putting you guys on the spot, but in terms of the accountability measures that are in place now, because, you know, there's no in-season accountability measures, but the post-season accountability measures that might require payback of something, I was wondering if you guys could describe sort of how those work, because it's like they're a sliding scale based on, you know, what the biomass status is of the stock. And so, you know, depending on if you're, you know, below 1/2 BMSY or, you know, between BMSY and 1/2 BMSY, you know, those payback provisions vary. And I think it just might be you know, as we're as part of the committee statement of task to look at alternative ways to manage sort of within our existing framework, I think it might be useful to hear about how that works if either one of you guys can tackle that. Thanks.
Yeah, I can try to cover that. I will say, I guess for the purposes of accountability measures, we've, you know, received kind of guidance that, or in the Magnuson National Standards Guidelines, it says, you know, basically there's proactive and reactive accountability measures, and we can have some combination of both of those to prevent annual catch limit overages and to mitigate overages when they occur. So we do consider our kind of typical rec measures process where we are looking at our current year harvest and adjusting to next year's harvest limit and catch limit, we do consider that kind of part of our accountability measures and the fact that we're constantly adjusting to try to prevent an overage in the next year. So I think that's part of our accountability measures. And then the reactive accountability measures when we evaluate the complete year, how that works is it's on a three-year moving average basis. So we evaluate a three-year moving average of catch compared to a three-year moving average of the annual catch limit. And what you kind of touched on the biomass conditions. And so basically if the stock is overfished or under a rebuilding plan, you have an overage payback that's the exact amount in pounds in a subsequent fishing year. And then if it's above the threshold and below the target, then it triggers two different possibilities depending on whether the total acceptable biological catch is exceeded or not. And that includes both the commercial and the recreational fisheries. So if it's just the commercial fishery or if it's just the recreational fishery that's over, it's adjustments to bag size and season to bring that harvest back down. And then if the total acceptable biological catch is exceeded, then it's a scaled payback based on biomass. And there's a formula associated with that. And then basically if the biomass is above the target, the accountability measures are adjustments in the next year for bag size and season. Hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you. I see we have Louise's hand was up and then Yang Chen. I think we might have lost Louise again. We'll hope to get him back. I'll turn to Yang and then we'll come back to Louise.
Thank you. Thank you, Julia and Kylie, for the very informative presentation. And I have two questions actually for Julia. She's one of my former students. it's great to see her here. So one is, you know, you talk about a lot of topics. I think, you know, some of them actually, you cannot consider them independently from the commercial fisheries. And for example, you have, you know, you try to develop a process for setting multi-year measures. And, you know, you try to make it stable over time. But how did you interact with commercial fisheries? What if total TAC, for example, SAL changed, and you will still maintain the ACL for recreational fisheries stable, or did you have to split between commercial and recreational fisheries? So I think this is you know, how you deal with all those topics. I think a lot of them actually relate to commercial fisheries. How potential trade-off between the two fisheries. My first question. My second question is, do you have a timeline? I think there are a lot of good topics here about the council and commission and have a timeline for those reforms. And are you going to do everything together or whatever you take an opportunity, you see this is appropriate and you're going to you can move forward with it. Thank you.
Yeah, good questions. So the first one for the commercial versus recreational, we are trying to consider them separately. So for all four species that recreational form would address, they all have an allocation of the ABC into a commercial component and a recreational component. And the way our accountability measures are currently set up is that everybody's accountable separately for their own portion of the ABC. So we're trying to stick within that framework that, and that's like a challenge that if we try to keep measures stable, we still have to make sure that the recreational fishery is staying below its ACL, because if it exceeds its ACL, you know, then there's a risk that you're also exceeding the APC and causing overfishing, and that, you know, could have impacts on the commercial sector too. So we're trying to think about it that way, that there's this allocation of the overall allowable catch or landings, depending on the species, that's allocated to the recreational fishery, and like sticking within that, how can we address some of these topics? And then in terms of the timeline, that's still uncertain. We're the council and the commission are going to talk about this in a few weeks in October. And that's one of the goals, is to get them to like formally initiate something. And it would depend on what topics they address. Some of these are definitely low hanging fruit that the monitoring and technical committees have already started to work on and are based on things that we've, you know, done in the past. So if it's focused on something like that, it could be a pretty short timeline through a framework action, so maybe like a year or two, but some of these other topics are huge and might require an amendment, which takes more time. So if it's something like recreational sector separation, that would take a longer time to develop, so maybe a few years for that one. They might talk about splitting it out into like a simpler action for the more straightforward things and a longer term action for some of the more complex things, but it's all still to be determined. So I think that the quickest that any of this could be done would be, you know, maybe in like a year or a year and a half that we would get to the point that we have any of this finalized. But again, it depends on which topics they want to prioritize.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. I have a question from Teresa, and then we'll see if Louise is still on the line with us and has a question as well. Go ahead, Teresa.
Hi, coming from the West Coast, I'm not quite sure how things is done in the East Coast. So I have some very like basic question. How does the uncertainty in the catch estimate being used in the management, that in the stock assessment, is that catch estimate assumed to be a known value without uncertainty, or in the in-season management, you have some way to deal with that uncertainty? And usually the uncertainty with a recreational catch estimate is quite big. That is my question.
I think that's something that Paul Rago might cover a little bit in his discussion of the SSC and stock assessment process. I think that in summary, the estimates of uncertainty and the MRAP estimates are considered in the stock assessment process. And as Julia mentioned, for rec reform, we're trying to take them into account more when we adjust the recreational measures. But I think Paul will talk more about how they're accounted for in the assessment process.
And how does it use in the management when the council or measure the catch over the season, that does it count in the uncertainty in the catch estimate? That, for example, in West Coast, if we reach the ACL, we'll close the fisheries, right? So in that process, is the uncertainty considered?
So this is Julia, I can start to answer that. So we, that's one of the reasons why we don't have in-season management at the ACL level, is because of concerns about uncertainty in the data and the timeliness of the data. So we're not doing in-season management in that way. And in terms of how we're dealing with uncertainty when we're thinking about what next year's management measures should be, that's something that we're don't really have really clear standardized guidelines on how we do it. It's kind of every year our monitoring and technical committee does those projections that Kylie talked about, and then they, you know, consider the circumstances and available data and decide what should be done next year, but it's all kind of on an ad hoc basis. So that's something that's definitely a major goal of the recreational reform initiative, is can we deal with that uncertainty in a more standardized way moving forward at the management measure part of it.
Thank you. I'm going to call on Louise if he still has a question. I saw him flash up and then disappear again. But Louise, if you're on the line with us and still have a question, go ahead. All right, we'll try to get Louise back. I'm gonna turn to Adam Nowalski, and Adam, if you'll introduce yourself before you ask your question, and then we'll go to Chris Dumas and Kai Lorenzen.
Actually, Stacey, if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead, Louise, yes, you're
well, just because I am having to connect and disconnect so often, apologies, everybody. But my system, for some reason, with WebEx today, is not working very well. So I want to take advantage that I'm actually being able to hear everybody to ask my questions. And so if I may, Stacey.
Please,
so number
ahead.
One, Julie and Kylie, thank you so much for the presentation. I thought that they were excellent, very informative and helpful. Question for you, it seems to me that you are dealing with this recreational regulatory adjustments on a pretty regular basis. Does this happen pretty much annually in the Middle Atlantic Council? I mean, for those four species that are the primary recreational components, are you having to deal with them basically every year?
For Center for Scup and Black Sea Bass, yes, we basically do review it every year. We don't always change things. Sometimes some states will stay the same. Sometimes federal measures will stay the same. Sometimes everything stays the same. But there's been a history of a lot of frequent changes of management measures basically every year. For bluefish, that's not so much the case. The measures were stable for many years. And just last year, they had to adjust them to be more constraining. But for summer flounder, scup, and black sea bass, it's pretty frequent still.
Right. And I think I'll follow up later, you know, after Paul's presentation in terms of the projections, right, of OFL and ABC, the huge streams that are produced, that should be reflective to some degree of the expected recruitment and be reflective of stock abundance in a way that there should be some way to better forecast what's going on there. Perhaps it's uncertainty levels. Perhaps is other issues, right, with the data that are preventing this from happening. And then another quick question is in relation to you not being able to get, I guess, like most of us, not being able to get stock assessments as frequently as you like to get for obvious reasons. But our center here in the Southeast, handling South Atlantic and Gulf, has been implementing a process that I think is being looked over by NIMFS as far as implementing nationally called an interim analysis, which actually uses indices of abundance to try and adjust last year's catch advice, right, and better align them with current abundance of the stock. It is not as complex as a stock assessment, but it's not as simple as simply relying on the existing projections. And it kind of helps you be a little more, not a lot, but a little more nimble in terms of adjusting your catch levels and your ACLs to current levels of abundance. Have you heard anything about this for Northeast? I mean, for Mid-Atlantic and Northeast or no?
Seeing Kylie not jumping in on that, I'll answer it. I'd say no, and Paul might want to elaborate on this too, but it seems like the process moving forward is to have every other year have an update to the assessment and then just rely on that. And then in the interim year, we have the option to get what we call data updates, which is just updates of things like catch and discards and fishery independent survey indices, but not updated, biomass or recruitment or fishing mortality estimates. So that seems to be the focus in our region moving forward, is just to have those updates every other year and in the interim year.
Okay, yeah, that answers my question. Thank you, Julia. And then Stacey, if I may just ask one more. real quickly, and I stopped.
You may. I also see Mike's hand going up. So let's let me just turn to Mike Weesey real quick and see if he has a follow up on that point.
Yeah. Thanks, Stacey. To the first point regarding each year, our council, along with ASMFC, have to address changes to these recreational fisheries. And one of the concepts in this recreational reform initiative that I'm excited about working on kind of gets us away from that reactive state where each year we consider whether we take additional reductions or additional liberalizations based on what our projected catch is during that current year compared with what the future recreational harvest limits are. One of the challenges there, though, is to discussion with anglers and our stakeholders who would also need to agree that while there would be times when we could liberalize our measures, we would hold status quo in the same way that during times when we might have to constrict our measures and restrict catch, we would also remain status quo. So that this concept moving forward kind of provides, in my mind, kind of a gray bar around whatever that target is. And as long as you're in within that gray area, you would be able to maintain that 2 year, 3 year stability, which is what I think the recreational anglers are really seeking. And that's one of the concepts in this reform initiative, which I'm also pretty excited about. So thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep. Go ahead, Louise, and then I'll turn to Adam, Chris, and Kai.
Yeah. And the last one is in terms of that first go, I think it was in Julia's portion of the presentation.
Louise, I think we might have lost you again. If you can hear us, go ahead, please, Louise, and do send me your questions, and I'll make sure that we get any follow-up from Julia, Kylie, and Mike on those points. I'm sorry you're having difficulty with the audio. I'll turn now to Adam, and then to Chris, Kai, and Teresa, if you have another question. Adam, please introduce yourself. Adam, showing that you're still on mute, so in order to unmute, if you're on a cell phone and not also on the web, you'll have to click *6 to unmute. There you go. Go ahead.
Yep. Thanks very much. Thanks so much again for the opportunity to participate today. I am chairman of the ASMFC's Summer Flounder, Scup, and Black Sea Bass Committee. Board, sorry, and I am also a member of the Mid-Atlantic Council. I've been on the council for over 5 years now. Just to provide a little bit more background and answers to the questions about the use of the MRIP estimates and the uncertainty around them, I think in the last couple of years, one is Julia and Kylie touched on. There's been use by the council and the commission with approval by National Marine Fisheries Service so that when the projected harvest is within the area of uncertainty, there has been an allowance for not changing measures, and it has gone both ways in recent years. When the actual number has called for a reduction or would allow for a liberalization, I think the service has done a pretty good job in being very consistent in that if we're going to go one way, we're not going to go the other way also. But again, as part of this recreational reform initiative, the intent is to codify that so there is consistency because the application has been somewhat inconsistent. However, in the decade prior to the last couple of years, the use of that uncertainty was not much of a factor. management at the council and commission level was almost exclusively using the point estimates themselves. And when we use those point estimates, we were inclined, well, I'll even go so far as to say we felt required by direction given from the service that we had to take every reduction required to the pound. When there were opportunities to liberalize, we would consider a more conservative approach in many years, which would lead to fish being left in the water. If we were allowed by the point estimate to liberalize by 10%, we would take into account other concerns, including discards, including the uncertainty, and in many cases, we would liberalize by a lower amount. But again, for over a decade, we would take those reductions when they were required to the number. What that has put us in and has led to a lot of the impetus for this rec reform, which has been an ongoing process now, almost 3 years. This was a process that was really led by my predecessor as chairman of the Summer Flounder, Scup, and Black Sea Bass Board at the commission, Bob Ballou. He and I was vice chair at the time, began this process species specific to black sea bass, brought a number of the ideas together. It gained support around the commission table and ultimately by the council as well. And we're looking very much to in the next month seeing this formalized. But we are, one of the reasons for this is because our regulations on the recreational side have become very restrictive, as Julia mentioned, on a species like black sea bass that are experiencing a very high abundance, in large part because of how the uncertainty was applied previously. It was requiring us to take every reduction to the pound, but when we had the opportunity to liberalize measures, we generally left fish in the water in many, many years. So I think that's important to understand that the use of the uncertainty is a very recent occurrence. One of the goals of the rec reform is to codify that, but as a result of in the past, taking reductions completely, but liberalizations leaving fish in the water resulted in a very different management result and a very different perception of how management used MRIP from the management community. Thanks again for the opportunity and look forward to participating throughout the day.
Thank you very much, Adam. Chris, do you still have a question? Nope. Okay, great. We'll move on to Kai then.
Thanks for this really, really interesting presentations. I have actually sort of three small sub questions. One is simply, my understanding is that your seasons are actually quite long or span the whole fishing year, is that right? So you don't have the issue of having very, very short seasons. That's just a question from my understanding. Secondly, so it seems that you've really moved away from in-season management to longer, you know, trying to have even beyond the single season, have longer term stability. And I was wondering whether that has been broadly, you know, accepted and supported, or are there, you know, stakeholders who would rather go the other way and have, you know, more in-season management to get to the last pound in every season. And the third question is, are you using any particular modeling tool or anything when you do your projections based on the current year's catch, or is it really mostly an eyeballing the data and, you know, discussing how to tweak it? Thanks.
Thanks. I think I'll take that one. This video moved, like trying to check her body language to see if she was going to answer it, but I think I can answer all of them. You're right, for these four species, we generally do have very long seasons. They're not all the entire year, but in general, they are pretty long seasons. And then your question about, is there a desire for bringing back in-season management? I think that was your question. I don't know that there's really a desire for that so much as there's been some, especially coming from some stakeholders in the commercial fishery, through this separate consideration of should we change the recreational, the overall commercial recreational allocation based on the new MRF data. There's been some in the commercial side of things have said, well, you know, if they're going to get more allocation, maybe they need to be held more strictly to their limits. So it's kind of like that's the desire from some stakeholders, not so much that they necessarily want to see in-season closures brought back. It's just a concern about the recreational fishery not being held very closely to their limits to the same extent that the commercial fishery is. And then in terms of the projection methodology that we do for the to project this year's harvest, it's pretty simple. We start with the preliminary wave 1 through 4 data, and then we look at the proportion of harvest in past years that occurred by wave, and then we apply that to this year's data to predict what we think is going to happen in waves 5 and 6, and that's the starting point. We generally do it on a state-by-state basis. So we generally start with that, and then the monitoring committee looks at it, and then they'll say, well, maybe you should use, you know, for the your proportions by wave, maybe you should use a longer time series or a shorter time series of past proportions based on how management measures changed or other considerations, where they might look at an individual state and say, like, tweak that one, but not the other one. But it's not really all that complicated of a statistical method. The starting point is just assuming that the proportions of harvest by wave this year will be the same as, you know, last year or a multi-year average.
Thank you. Okay. Stacey, am I allowed one quick follow-up?
Sure.
Thank you. Do you, when you do have overages or underages in the private or the combined recreational sector, is that pretty symmetric? You have as many or overages as much as underages, or do you tend to have more overages?
I can take that one. It depends on the species, and it sort of depends on kind of like where you are with the biomass and things like that. There's been, for summer flounder in the last couple of years, there's been about as many underages as overages. It's kind of fluctuated. For black sea bass, the last few years have been several years of overages and large underages. For scup, it's been several years of underages. And that's just because of where the quotas are set currently. But of course, you know, things can vary, you know, in certain time blocks if the assessment changes, but it varies by species.
Thank you very much.